Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, whenever you're listening, and welcome to Tri-State at the Plate. I'm your host, Andy Burdick, and alongside me, as always, is the Irish Bulldog, Bob Finkbeiner.
Hey, how are you?
And the Billy Shears of this Lonely Hearts Club band is our producer, Jason Ruggiero.
Good to be here.
And last but not least, our soon-to-be Dr. Garrett Britton is back with us this week to tell us just how bad the bad news is.
How you doing?
So, Zach Greinke. Turns out Zach Greinke is not Kyle Farnsworth. How do you guys feel about your $147 million man if he ends up with a broken collarbone after trying to tackle a batter?
You know, I think he should take lessons from Nolan Ryan. If you're going to fight, do it Nolan Ryan style.
Well, and here's the thing that kind of
irritated
me. Or
do it Don Zimmer style.
There you go.
Just fall down out of the way.
Yes.
That is also a good way to avoid injury, because you look like a real jerk if you're punching someone who's fallen down. But what kind of irritated me, like, when I went back and watched the video was, you know, he plunked Carlos Quinton. Carlos Quinton throws his bat down. He's angry, whatever. And then he takes a couple steps out and just stops for a second. Like, if you're going to charge the mound, charge the mound.
Well, and that's where this whole thing about what did Greinke say and that made Carlos Quinton come out. That's a bunch. I mean, come on. Carlos Quinton's a man. You know, he doesn't need Zach Greinke, 180-pound, you know, skinny guy, bad-mouthing him. It's like, really, that's what made him run out? And if you look at it, you can barely see Greinke's lips move. It's like, what could be so offensive that came out of that? That man just, like, took him over. That's it. I'm done. I don't know. The whole thing is leaves a bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah, I don't. And I'm totally on the Don Mattingly side, I guess I'm in that camp with Mattingly, where I think Quinton should be suspended for as long as Greinke's out.
I don't think so.
I'm fine with suspend him as long as you want.
I'm not maybe as long as Greinke's out, because that's just unrealistic. But but more than 8 games. I mean, you know, Carlos Quinton's thing about, well, he's hit me a bunch of times, blah, blah, blah. I've never charged the mound. Well, most of those, you know, because he's been hit 116 times or whatever in his career, most of those are because he hangs out over the plate.
Exactly.
It's like, you know you're going to get hit when you leave your hands hanging out over the plate. So don't act like, well, I didn't charge the mound when it was my fault.
Yeah. You know? It's kind of like Barry Bonds. Barry Bonds literally stood as close to home plate as he could get, which is why he wore that mechanical elbow guard thing that would take the impact of a 100-mile-an-hour fastball away. Like, if you're going to crowd the plate like that, don't be surprised when you get hit a lot. Like, Jason Kendall was never upset. That's his job.
I just don't think Greinke meant to hit him there.
Absolutely.
I don't doubt that there may be some bad blood lingering over the fact that Greinke has hit Quinton other times, and you know they go back quite a ways back to the Royals White Sox days when they were in the same division, but at that point in a 2-1 game with a full count, I don't think Greinke was trying to hit him there.
Yeah, and on that point too, and I can't remember where I found it, I'll have to see if I can find it on Twitter so I can cite it, but someone said that Eric Bedard has hit Carlos Quinton 3 times in 9 at-bats. So
if you're Eric Bedard, next time Carlos Quinton comes up, be careful.
Yeah, watch out.
Wear shoulder pads.
Because I bet he's got your name on a very short list.
I think Greinke made the mistake, though, that Quinton's not a small guy.
Oh, no. Yeah. No.
Not at all. And the way he went into him was just, like, really?
Well, and I don't want to blame AJ Ellis, because it's not, you know, people act like, oh, it's your job to protect the catcher or the pitcher. It's not really his job. He was a little tardy, though. You know, it's like if you watch the tape of the Carlos Carrasco, Kevin Euclid fiasco, which we'll talk about later, the Indians catcher jumps right in front of Euclid immediately.
Right.
As soon as Quinton drops his bat, AJ Ellis needs to step in front of him and not just kind of hold onto his shirt from behind. You know, and AJ Ellis did. I mean, he sprinted out there and got Quinton off of him right away. He basically tackled him and drove him right into the ground, but by then it was too late because the shoulder shiver from Carlos Quinton had already delivered its collarbone breaking blow at that point.
Poor Zach Greinke. I don't know how the Dodgers will ever recover.
He can rest that elbow though now.
Yeah, that'll give him a chance.
There you go.
So let's be glass half full kind of people. Well, on today's show, we'll have our medical updates from Dr. Garrett. We'll hit each of the clubs and what's going on with all our organizations. And at the end, we're going to finish up with a very passionate, I'm sure,
oh boy.
Soapbox Sunday. So let's kick it off with
Carlos Carrasco themed Sunday.
There. Oh, you guys are you're in luck. So let's kick it off with Dr. Garrett and get to our medical updates.
Is there a doctor in the house?
I'm not a doctor yet, but I play one on the internet. All right, we're going to go over to a land where men are men and the catchers and carry the good disabelt. So Lou Marson, the team is staying cautious with him. He was placed on 15-day DL Monday.
After he was forced to come into the game.
Right.
It kind of played their hand when Santana got hurt.
And the quote was that he's not close to a rehab assignment yet.
Yeah.
So it might be a little while.
And Andy, I know you'll like this quote. Lou Marson was quoted as saying, they asked him if the play happened, you know, if after he rehabs and everything and he's standing there and it's the same play again, they said, "Do you block the plate?" And he said, "Yeah, I blocked the plate." He's like, "I'm a backup catcher.
That's what I do."
He said, "I was told," he's like, "that, you know, if you're a backup catcher and you block the plate, that's as good as hitting a home run." So, I mean, I get, you know,
they have all kinds of names for those. They're called pawns in some,
but at least, you know,
cannon fodder.
At least he recognizes it. He embraces it, you know, rather than the backup catcher that moves out of the way and, you know, hits a buck 10 and trying to do the swipe tag.
And then good old Carlos Santana.
Oh, God.
Took that fastball Monday's game against the Yankees.
That added just so many insults to the injury. It added an injury to the insult of that game, actually.
They took x-rays of the hand, which came back negative for fracture, which is great news for him.
Yes, that was my biggest fear as I saw Carlos Santana writhing on the ground in pain.
So this, you know, this could be a week. It could turn out to be a couple months. We're just going to have to keep an eye on it.
Yeah, well, they were acting like he was going to play yesterday.
Right, and he decided to take himself out of the game.
Yeah, it was one of those deals where Friday he told Terry Francona, "I'm ready to play tonight," and it was the old manager, you know, "Okay, you tell me you're ready to play tonight, I wait a couple days, and then everything will be okay." Well, then Saturday he took batting practice, and he was feeling some pain in his thumb,
yeah,
I guess.
Some discomfort. So he's considered day-to-day. We'll keep an eye on him.
Yeah.
Scott Kazmir pitched Friday.
Yeah. we'll see.
He's expected to return this week.
Yeah, the Indians don't need... They only have four starters right now, but they don't need a fifth starter until April 20th. And I think he's eligible to come off April 17th.
Yes.
So hopefully he'll fit within that window somewhere.
And just as a reminder, he was placed on the 15-day DL retroactive April 2nd for an intercostal strain.
Right, yes. They weren't going to call him up till that started on a Saturday against the Rays, but then they called him up earlier so they could backdate the DL.
Right.
Yeah.
So we'll see. There'll be some news this week about him.
How about my favorite Indian player, Jason Giambi?
He was activated.
I saw that.
He's on the roster. Terry Francona said...
He's healthy again.
He said, "I don't like to make a roster beforehand, but I think he's going to play Sunday." He thinks the Jake Peavy matchup is a good one for Giambi rather than the Chris Sale matchup. But based on the way the Indians beat up Chris Sale, maybe that was the wrong way to go. I don't know. We'll see today. So
it's kind of
Jason
sad
Giambi in game action.
That the most Indians runs recently have come against Chris Sale, David Price.
That's just the way baseball goes, man.
So if you're an ace, watch out.
Indians are ace killers.
They're marginal in the pros.
Ace killers.
Have a good day.
Jose Quintana, you can spin a one-hitter for eight innings, but Chris Sale, huh.
Yeah.
What else you got, Dr. Garrett?
Jason Kipnis.
Why do the Indians always have the longest segment in the injury news part?
It's tough. Left elbow soreness, very vague.
that's an understatement.
He's considered day-to-day.
Yes, this goes with the phantom right elbow soreness he experienced during spring training.
Back in the spring, Terry Francona said that he had another problem with the elbow in spring training, and he's not sure if this had something to do with...
They thought maybe he just slept on it wrong.
The way he slept on it.
Wow.
But... the thing is, the new Indians now, without we're actually not floundering completely without Carlos Santana and Jason Kipnis. Could you imagine if they weren't on this team last year for a stretch? Oh,
man.
And now, though, you've got Aviles, who's, you know, at this point almost a one-for-one for Kipnis because he's struggling, and Rayburn, and Yan Gomes, who hit a home run yesterday.
He sure did.
And he's looked pretty good catching, so we're hanging in there despite the long list from the triage unit.
And speaking about elbows, Carlos Carrasco, a sensitive subject in these parts. Done.
Forgot about him.
It's interesting because, you know, he's coming off Tommy John surgery, and he's got power.
Yeah, he's throwing 97. Usually he gets up to about 95.
So that, you know, that speaks to the rehab regimen that he had following the Tommy John surgery. He's had enough time so that, you know, this he can recover fully from this surgery, and it just goes to show, you know, how great this surgery is for pitchers.
Yeah, you know, and we've talked on this podcast before about how you don't actually, you know, you don't get stronger from Tommy John. So people think, well, how's he throwing 97 then? We were talking beforehand, Carlos Carrasco admitted that, you know, his elbow has hurt him pretty much his whole life. So it may be that, you know, he's actually got, you know, free and easy, painless movement from that elbow for the first time since he was, you know, in high, you know, 14 years old, I guess. So he has other problems that we'll discuss later. Unfortunately, those 2 years of rehab didn't develop his character quite as much as perhaps it could have, but we'll get into that later.
Then over to Detroit, who makes my life easy.
Oh, absolutely.
Garcia was cleared to begin baseball activities. He's returning from that right bruised heel. Mm-hmm. He is full weight-bearing and says he doesn't have any pain, so we're hoping good things from him. Over to Pittsburgh.
That's it?
See, that was it.
That's it?
Nice and quick and easy.
He said it was easy.
Yep.
It's like ripping off a Band-Aid.
Making my job easy.
Now, the bullpen, to me, is quite injured, but they're actually pitching still.
But they're healthy. Yeah, they just throw like they're injured.
Right.
Like a wounded duck.
The big news out of Pittsburgh is Wandy's hammy.
Yeah.
strained left hamstring. He's considered day-to-day. He's not going to start in today's game.
No. Yeah, we actually, and I'll touch on that a little bit more. We have Philip Irwin starting today.
Who?
I was going to say the same thing, but I felt, you know.
Filthy Phil 36. Follow him on Twitter.
Oh, my goodness. Filthy Phil. Moving along.
That injury was interesting because it was early. You know, he only went two innings.
Yeah.
You know, before they pulled him. So we're going to see how he does with that.
And you could tell, you know, he kind of walked around the mound a little bit, and, you know, you could tell that something wasn't quite right.
This might have been something started earlier.
Yeah.
Update, Jeff Karstens making a return from that shoulder injury, shoulder inflammation, discomfort. He threw 25 pitches at 90 feet and 2,500 feet Wednesday, so he's looking good. Brendan Inge has played 6 games on his AAA rehab assignment, and he's coming back from that scapula injury back in March. He was hit by a ball. So as far as injuries go, that wraps it up.
And let me ask you this,
like,
really
quick.
I don't
like the disparity in the time spent.
how so many tribe players are on that medical list. Let me ask you really quick, too, because we actually, Bob just pointed this out to me today. I didn't see it last night, but they put Kyle McPherson on the DL last night, and they've been very, like, nondescript about it as well with McPherson. But apparently, according to Rum Bunter, McPherson's not sure what's wrong, but he's having pain in his forearm, and it's getting worse. And you can tell just by looking at his numbers.
Forearm pain. I wonder what that could be.
But, you know, like, something isn't right. You know, I think last night he gave up, like, 7 runs in 1 2/3 innings or something.
Close to his elbow?
Well, that is concerning.
Was it more toward the wrist?
There's
been
nothing.
More toward the elbow.
Everything that I found has literally been, like, just right arm pain. Just pain.
U-C-L.
So. Yeah. Yeah, there's not a whole lot in the actual forearm can go wrong.
Uh-oh.
So typically, we're going to be looking at some other body part.
That's something that manifests itself more in a different area.
If you couldn't tell, Jason was pointing to his elbow.
Oh, yeah. Radio.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'll follow up on that. And
yeah, keep your eyes peeled on
now,
that.
Now, Kyle MacPherson, when he gave up all those runs, was that against the Clippers?
It was.
Yes. Which, they've been in offensive funk. So
glad we could help him out with that.
Well, I'm just saying. You know, just putting that out there.
Well, is that all we have for our medical updates?
That'll be it.
Not too bad other than the tribe again. Sorry, Jason. Thanks for the updates, Dr. Garrett. We appreciate that. We're going to move on to our clubs and what's going on with each of them. So let's start off with Jason and the Tribe. What's going on over in Cleveland?
Well, there's a lot going on in Cleveland. But the thing that kind of covers the whole thing has been frustrating me all week is there's been a ton of overreaction to the Indians' first 10 games. People are like, I mean, it's crazy. You know, Ubaldo is horrible. Well, he had one good start and one bad start, and I think that's kind of par for the course for Ubaldo. I mean,
like last year.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, you would expect him to do that again, mm-hmm. you know. And then people are all over McAllister, and then he goes out yesterday and proves me right, basically, by having a really good start against the White Sox. You know, and it's just... people all over Myers. Well, okay, so Myers concerns me a little because it's not like a control thing. It's more I'm just grooving it right down the middle of the plate at about 85 because I don't have my velocity back. So we'll see what Myers does today. But it's just people are having these wild reactions, you know, and my defense, I guess, is, okay, so if you think from two starts that Ubaldo is going to be just horrible, then I guess you think Justin Masterson is going to win the Cy Young because he's been amazing. You know, or if you think Asdrubal Cabrera is not going to hit because he's 4-for-34, then apparently you think Mark Reynolds is going to hit like 58 home runs this year.
That'd be
because
awesome,
in his first 30 at bats, he's hit 4. You know, it's just there's a lot of I think some of it because of the money that was spent, you know, they expected this team to like go out and win the first 10 games and score 30 runs a game or something. And the fact that they've struggled at all. There's been a lot of overreaction. I mean, there are guys to be concerned about, guys like Myers, and he'll pitch today, and we'll see how that goes, and we'll get more into the starting pitching here in a minute. But a guy like Kipnis, you know, am I concerned about Jason Kipnis that he's 4-for-32? I'm concerned, but like you watch the game Friday night, he laces a ball opposite field that Vicieto, who's not a good fielder, so it's hard to know if it was like a Shelley Duncan kind of good play where like a normal left fielder would have glided back and caught the ball, but Vicieto had to make a rumbling, bumbling, stumbling over the shoulder catch. But the ball he hit to right field that Alex Rios grabbed, that was a great play that Alex Rios made to save a double. And you see Kipnis do this this last week where he will look bad. He'll strike out looking or strike out on a curveball really pretty badly, but then he'll lace a ball and the outfielder makes a good play. So again, it's early, you know. I mean, I don't think over 30 at bats we can say Jason Kipnis needs to go back to AAA and, you know, we need to start Mike Avilas every game. I think if we're still having these problems at Memorial Day, then that's a different story. And Asdrubal Cabrera, he looks lost, but I don't have any doubt that Asdrubal Cabrera will get it together. He just looks very caught in between at the plate right now. He's striking out looking a lot. But the point I'm making is over 400 or 600 at bats, I'm not really concerned about 30. You know, like if it's July 4th and Asdrubal Cabrera goes 4-for-30, people are going to go, well, he's struggling right now, but he'll come out of it.
Right.
But since it's the first week of the season, people are like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
This is horrible. He can't hit at all. What's happened?
I think it's like a psychological thing where people look at it. You look at it at the beginning of the year, and because, you know, it's an average and you have nothing else to balance it out, you're hitting 188, and that number is just right there.
Exactly.
But you're hitting like 280 over the season, and then you go in a 188 slump, you know, really notice it in your batting.
I don't think that Carlos Santana is going to hit 400 the whole year, but he's hitting 400 right now.
Yeah.
You know, and nobody's making a big deal about it. Every comment is, well, you know, he's hitting good now, but he'll cool off. Well, yes. and Esdrubal Cabrera will have his good stretches too. You know, things even out. But to go back to the pitching, Masterson's looked amazing. It's becoming one of those things where you see Gomes or Morrison or whoever's catching him, because we've gone through four catchers in the first 2 weeks of the season. But they kind of just sit in the middle of the plate and say, two-seamer, and hold their glove in the middle of the plate, and it goes wherever it goes. And, you know, that kind of is like, you're a little worried that you're going to get like the Fausto Carmona 2008 reaction eventually, where they just put the bat on their shoulder and say, you know what, I'm just going to wait for one that's in the strike zone. But the thing is, the movement is so good that it looks like it is a strike. You know what I mean? Like, these guys are swinging at balls that end up at their feet. And this is what we know. I mean, we know Masterson can do this. He's done it before. And the other thing is, he's got an amazing slider right now, which he usually doesn't have. And if you watch the White Sox game on Friday, he was making people like Paul Konerko look like a fool with that slider. And that's, you know, that extra weapon he has, where you think, okay, I'm just going to sit. I'm going to spit on this two-seamer. And that's, he spins that slider in there, and you can't hold back. And all of a sudden, it's out of the zone on the other side of the plate. So hopefully he keeps that up. McAllister had a good start the other day. The Carlos Carrasco fiasco, I mean... we'll get more into that later. I don't think Carlos Carrasco, now with his 8-game suspension, is going to be back till September. Because, you know, they really worked to help him get around that suspension.
He's done.
And now he did this to them. I don't think he's done, because he's the only thing they have left from the Cliff Lee trade, really. I mean, other than Lou Marson, which he is what he is. But... and he has talent. I just think it's going to be a season long. No, I don't care what you do in Columbus. You just stay down there and pitch, and we'll get to you later. Kind of attitude. I mean, I think you have to factor in too. He threw at Kevin Youkilis, who is Terry Francona's buddy. So I don't think a guy like Terry Francona, I don't think that's lost on him. You know, I think Terry Francona takes it kind of like Kevin Youkilis is a. You know, a serious player in this game, and he's way more than Carlos Carrasco ever could be. And you just threw at his head because he gave up a home run. So I think Tito probably didn't take very kindly to that.
You know, there are some things that shouldn't change, and I respect the Yankees, what they are as an organization and tradition, but Kevin Youkilis needs his facial hair.
Yeah, yes, it looks pretty strange. I don't recognize him sometimes.
Yeah.
But as I said earlier, they don't need a fifth starter until April 20th. So hopefully Scott Kazmir will make that start when that turn comes up. Corey Kluber got called up, and then two rainouts meant that he never got to make his spot start, and he got sent back down. But that's where we're at, because you don't want to call Bauer up. I mean, you could. You know, he's healthy, but he's now your seventh option. And Corey Kluber, I would say, is your sixth. Dice K left the game in Columbus the other day. He only pitched like 2 innings. Wasn't very pretty. Carrasco can't come up. So it's one of those deals where here the first 2 weeks of the season and we had all this depth lined up. You know, it's the old adage, you can never have too much pitching. 2 weeks in, you really only have one option if a starter gets hurt. You know, I mean, you could call Bauer, but you don't really, you know, he's not ready. So. That's the week on the reservation. It was kind of a long one, even though there were 2 games rained out. We had Marston get pulled in when you could tell he wasn't ready. When he had to bat in the 9th inning of that game, he stepped out of the box between every pitch and went, kind of shook his head. It was kind of like, yeah, I'm not really seeing things right very well right now.
He's seeing 3 baseballs just trying to hit the one in the middle.
Yeah, and I was really... when Chris Perez hit Carlos Santana, I wanted to jump through the TV. I thought, you big buffoon. Like, of all the things you could, you know, Chris Perez is one of those love-hate kind of guys. And when he botches that sign and drills Santana in the hand, it was in the middle of that game where they're already getting killed in their home opener, and you're like, here we go. The only guy who's hitting right now is probably just broke his hand. So, you know, I think in some ways we came out all right for this week based on how badly it started with the Ubaldo start, Santana getting injured, and then the Carrasco / Myers fiasco on Wednesday night.
On another note, did you see that they are having Tuesday a night. Traditional doubleheader now?
Yes, they're going to make that game up in a traditional doubleheader in May.
Mm-hmm. Yep, May.
Yeah, well, they start at 12:05, and then the next game is half an hour or whatever after. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if you want to see, if you want, but you got to, the first two games went so badly, I almost don't even want to, you know, normally I take the opportunity, like, oh yeah, two games for the price of one, man.
It's bad when Lyle overbase hitting home runs against your pitching staff.
Yeah, it's bad.
I tell you what, listening to you guys talk about Cleveland baseball makes me feel a little bit better about being a Pirates fan. God, man, that's just depressing. That's really, it reminds me a lot of just the city of Cleveland in general. Just super depressing.
Well, you know, but Friday night, you know, that was a really big game for them when they won that walk-off. You know, you could see, I think there was a lot of tension came off from that game because you got that first win at home, you got that walk-off win, Swisher delivered, Bourne delivered, you got a good start. You know, I think, and yesterday they just ripped Chris Sale up, so.
That was awesome.
We'll see what they do today. Hope they score some runs because Myers is pitching, so.
Well, after that, let's move on to Detroit. Bob, you got a little positive news over there about Detroit?
Yes and no. The positive is Tigers, you know, I hate to say I'm a Tigers fan, but I have become one, are tied for first place. They're 6-5 so far.
Oh, big deal.
The big deal is
we're one game out of first.
Right. They're in first place despite having this atrocious bullpen. Yeah. I've been watching these Tiger games on MLB TV. This bullpen's a mess. I thought it'd be a strength of this team going into the season, minus like not having a solo closer. Beyond that, though, Albuquerque, disaster. Coke, disaster. I feel bad for starting five. Like, when you get pulled from the game, you're probably thinking, oh my God, what's going to happen now? And just continue to blow leads.
That's why Verlander throws 230 innings every year.
Yeah. I think I said that last week when I was talking about Scherzer. And he's just standing there shaking his head like, oh, here we go.
They currently are 27th in the league with their bullpen. They have three losses, a 5.91 ERA. They have allowed 21 earned runs in just 32 innings pitched.
Nice. Solid.
Yeah. So it's a good thing they have Prince Fielder and that guy, Miguel Cabrera, offensively. That guy.
Maybe you've heard of him.
They get some runs on the board because they're going to need some help in the games. Go around the horn with the organization. The Mud Hens are off to a decent start. Our former Erie Seawolf, Jordan Letterton, is on fire. He just homered his first AAA home run here this past week. Our top prospect, Nick Castellanos, has found the hit zone recently. He's now hitting a clip of, like, I think he's hitting around 238 thereabouts, but a lot better than the first week, which was awful. Bruce Rondon, four innings pitched, only one hit, two walks, three strikeouts, and one save. He has finished two games so far this year. So if he can continue to find the strike zone, maybe we'll see him in Detroit here sometime soon.
And Castellanos has his batting average up to a healthy 268 now.
Oh, 268. Okay. Yeah. I want to slip the guy. So just
cruising right along then.
A lot better. Casey Crosby rebounding from an awful first start of the year to go four innings pitched, two hits, one earned. However, four walks and five strikeouts. He needs to find the plate better, more consistently, if he wants to last longer in games and then finally reach Detroit later on in the year. Seawolves went 2-2 this week. They played Binghamton and Reading Phillies. James McCann, a favorite of our buddy Andy here, has been heating up at the plate. Victor Larez pitched last night, has gone 10 innings so far this year, 8 Ks, and nice 1-0 record. Ramon Cabrera, acquired in the Andy Oliver trade, is 5th in the Eastern League in hitting, a .400 average. Rule 5 pick, and then traded for Kyle Lobstein. Pitched another good game. He's now 10 2/3 innings pitched with a 3.38 ERA and 10 Ks. Justin Souza has two saves. Not a lot of run yet this year. And Warwick Saupold, if I pressed that right, he's the Australian, has gone 12 innings pitched with 11 strikeouts, only two walks, and a .83 whip. The Seawolves' strength so far this year has been in pitching. They rank first in the Eastern League in pitching, a 3.30 ERA, and they're currently fifth in batting with a .259 average. And then letter news notes from the Flying Tigers, Drew Van Hagen. Looks pretty solid, even though he has two losses, gone 10 and a third, only allowed 5 hits, 3 earned. And Dean Green is raking still with a .333 average and an .896 OPS.
There's our boy Dean.
Dean Green.
Yes. And the Whitecaps, their full season low A team, Montreal Robinson, coming off that 5 innings of no hit ball through his second start, now has 11 innings pitched, only 2 earned, and a .64 whip.
Putting up some sexy numbers down there.
Oh, yeah.
Name. Well, thanks for that, Bob. Always like to know what's going on down in Detroit, all their affiliates. Let's move on to Pittsburgh. We're going to try and stay positive.
Yeah.
We're gonna stay as positive as we can here with the Pirates.
The score runs finally.
Yeah, that's nice. That's been really nice after the first couple games. And it's actually funny that you mentioned that, because one of the first things we're going to talk about, General Manager Neil Huntington said that because we have all these arms now in our organization, you know, we have Charlie Morton rehabbing and Liriano rehabbing, and you know, we have all these extra arms and Garrett Cole down in the minors. He was asked if they would be interested in trading any of these arms for a bat, because through our first, you know, like 6 or 8 games, I mean, Pittsburgh had scored a combined, I think it was like 6 runs or some, you know, some ridiculously low number like that. And he said that he's not interested, according to Tom Singer on MLB.com. They're happy with what they have right now and what they've built, so they're going with what they have for right now. Starling Marte swinging a really, really hot bat to start the year. He's hitting a triple slash line. For those of you who aren't aware, with the triple slash, we go batting average, on-base, slugging. He's hitting .341, .383, .432. So he's swinging a pretty good bat here at the beginning of the year. However, the downside with Starling Marte is what's always been the downside, which is he only has 2 walks and 11 strikeouts. And his batting average has been fueled by a ridiculously high batting average on balls in play. His batting average on balls in play is up to .455.
Wow.
So, and a typical like batting average, they say, statistically speaking, like a batting average on balls in play, you'll finish the season around .300. You know, that's where a typical batting average on balls in play lies. And, you know, you have players that are exceptions to that rule, like line drive players, you know, that hit the ball more on a line. Their batting average on balls in play is obviously going to be a little higher because they're hitting line drives instead of pop flies, ground balls. But .455, if you're not familiar with batting average on balls in play, is completely unsustainable. So when some of those balls that he's hitting aren't falling in, you're going to start seeing his batting average fall down. You're going to start seeing him on base less. And I think it's going to start irritating Pirates fans at some point, especially if they don't understand that the correction's coming. Like, his K rate's at 23% right now. Like, you just can't keep getting on base like that with those numbers. So, that's just kind of something to keep an eye on. That was why I was really hoping to watch him develop a little plate patience and learn to take some walks, because when he gets on the base paths, he's devastating on the base paths, but he's got to get there, and he's not going to be able to do it all season long with a .455 BABIP, so. We already touched on Wandy's injury. They made it clear right away Garrett Cole is a no-go for that. What they did instead was they brought up righty Philip Irwin. Filthy Phil 36 on Twitter. You can follow him there.
I have a question for you about Cole.
Yeah.
Did I see he only went 2 innings his last start?
Yeah, he only went 2 innings, and actually, you know, I went back and watched the innings, and, you know, no one said anything. I'm assuming it was probably just because of a...
I saw he had a high pitch count, too.
Yeah, it could have been the pitch count, maybe the weather. I don't know. I guess I didn't look at that to see what they were doing. I mean, there was nothing wrong with him, because that was the first thing I thought. When I saw he went 2 innings, my heart stopped for a second. And I went and, you know, I watched the video of him playing. You know, I went and read everything that I could about it, and no one mentioned anything about anything being wrong. Because if they did, my heart might have literally just stopped beating. So it seems like he's okay.
So he's healthy.
Yeah, okay. That's my understanding as of right now.
Pirates fans currently, can relax.
Yeah.
Currently, he's healthy.
I can calm down after that. So he was definitely no-go. We called up Philip Irwin. Actually, we designated Josh Harrison for assignment today to make room for Phil on the roster.
Like that guy.
There's some scuttlebutt around that the Blue Jays might be interested in John McDonald after the Jose Reyes injury.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well,
speaking of which, I told Andy on the way down here, did you know that when the Royals had Jose Bautista for a little bit in 2004, that the one guy considered keeping him around because he's so athletic as a catcher.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we just gave him away for peanuts instead.
Right.
But he stunk.
Yeah. For the Pirates. He did. Apparently no one thought to tell him to pull the ball.
Yeah. Swing harder.
I don't know.
You know, but I mean, that's just one of those things. Like, you can't even blame the Pirates. No. I mean, he was bad.
Yeah. No, he was pretty bad. Yeah.
I mean, it's like, how long are you going to wait?
Yeah. No, hey, I totally agree. Maybe someone just should have mentioned that you should try pulling the ball. that's all I'm saying.
I think it had been brought up.
Maybe. Maybe. moving on from Jose Bautista and those bitter memories. The Pirates also designated Chris LaRue for assignment because he just got destroyed. And they actually called up Brian Morris from AAA Indy. Morris he'd thrown three innings, struck out two as the stopper for the Indianapolis Indians, not to be confused with the Cleveland Indians.
I hate that they have an Indians affiliate.
Tribe time. I'm gonna start tweeting that everything that happens.
It makes AAA. It makes it very confusing.
Hashtag tribe time.
It's like if our AAA affiliate was the Columbus Pirates. That doesn't make any sense.
Then you
could name the team whatever you want. Why did you choose Indians?
Then you could tweet hashtag raise it after the Columbus Pirates beat something.
But you're arguing something different. I'm arguing the stupidity of naming the team the Indianapolis Indians.
Now I kind
of
like
There's a small subsection of our country who wishes that we refrain from using any kind of Indian name.
Yeah, we don't have that much time to discuss that.
So yeah, we'll stay away from the politically fueled topics. Alberto Santos, who actually I think Bob we were just talking about him. He's leading the Eastern League, or one of the leaders in the Eastern League in hitting. He had his first homer for the Altoona Curve on Monday against the Akron Arrows. And then on Tuesday, the ninth, Andrew Lambeau hit the first cycle in the history of the Altoona Curve.
Nice try.
I always like the cycle, little neat statistical coolness that happens. I mean, it doesn't really mean that you're a good player or a bad player, but it's just kind of neat that you got all those hits.
Yeah.
In one game, yeah. That's cool. And then Lambeau's teammate, Talion, struck out a career-high 10 batters against the Harrisburg Senators Friday night across six innings. He surrendered two earned runs, and he walked three batters. And Talion was quoted as saying that pretty much everything was working for him. He was using his four-seamer to get ahead early, and he put him away with the curveball. And, you know, I went back and watched the replay of the game on MILB TV, and his curve is nasty. I mean, when his curve is working, it's going to be a pitch that's going to buckle some knees. So he said the second time through the lineup, he threw some first-pitch curveballs, mixing it up a little bit. And if he fell behind, he'd throw a curve, keeping everybody kind of off balance. And he said he threw a couple good changeups too, so he's feeling pretty good about his outing. And, you know, he's working on a lot of stuff, and he's doing a great job trying to keep everybody off balance. And
how do you feel about outing?
I loved it.
Okay.
Oh, it was watching that curveball was le magnifique. It was a lot of fun to watch, and I'm really excited about him progressing. And I just love listening to the guy talk, because every time that they have a little snippet from him on the Pirates website or on MILB, he's always a very heady pitcher. It's, you know, he's always thinking about what's happening in the game and how he approaches it, and it's just kind of neat to hear him talk about that. And then here's my favorite update of the day, guys. Stetson Alley, pitcher turned third baseman turned first baseman. Stetson Alley hit his first home run. It was a walk-off on the 7th. And he already has, as of this moment of recording, 5 home runs this season. He hit 2 last night against Asheville, just raking down there.
He's a beast.
He's
so you're planning on him hitting 58 home runs this year?
I'm going out to buy my Stetson Alley jersey right now.
How's he doing in the field?
That I don't know, and I don't care to know.
Since the Pirates are in the National League,
we're
he will be required to don a glove once in a while.
Clearly not good, since we've had to move him three.
Well, I was kind of just alluding to that. I'm trying to bring you down to my level.
Just knock me down a peg or two. Hey, yeah. Negative Nancy over there. Let me bask in the glory of Stetson Alley.
I got Brett Myers going today.
Brett Myers and that awesome goatee.
It is an awesome goatee.
It is, yeah.
I'll give him some credit for that.
And you know, again, like in all seriousness, like I don't, you know, obviously he's doing this down in West Virginia, so it's not like
something. It's a start though.
It's exactly. I mean, when I looked at Stetson Alley, and I think I probably even said this a couple weeks ago, like, I really thought Stetson Alley would just wash out of baseball, like, relatively quickly, like, within years, like, very soon. And so to see him doing something like this, it does kind of go to show, at least, he's got skills. And, I think I'd mentioned this before, too, Keith Lodge said that his bat would have projected as a second or third round bat going into the draft where we took him. So, he does have some skills there. Most of it's raw power, which obviously, we're seeing him go on a little spurt like this. So I'll be curious to see whether he can keep this up and how pitchers start adjusting to him.
And he's young still, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's 20, 21. I mean, he's...
Oh, yeah, definitely.
He's...
There's time to develop still.
So that was good to see. So, and that's it out of Pittsburgh. So I think next we're all going to be hopping up on our little soapbox there.
J.R. House.
Oh, boy.
Let's take all that disgust and despair and pay it off.
Just, yeah, step off.
Ooh!
I'm a grit guy myself. Mm.
Keep talking there, Andy.
You know what? I'm not going to formally apologize to Al.
Drink a pint of maple syrup and raise the Jolly Roger.
Sal Fasano! That's Sal Fasano. Boy, I really said that loud. That was really passionate about
yeah,
Sal Fasano.
Yeah, you were passionate there.
by the way,
large man.
Stetson Alley, 22 years old.
22.
So we're all
clear. Move on.
All right, well, time to hop up on our soapbox. And I don't know which one of you guys is going to take this, whether it's going to be Bob or Jason. But
Bob's going to start.
I can start, but yeah.
Here's a little soapbox. Carlos Carrasco, he's up to his shenanigans again, apparently. Fresh off his suspension, he goes out and he decides to plunk somebody else right after giving up a home run. Bob, why don't you go ahead and give us a rundown on the situation?
All right, here's my problem. We've heard a lot from Jason so far this year on how the Indians can go ahead and work the roster to keep Carrasco on the 25-man team.
Which they did.
To serve his suspension, only to have him make his debut, get shelled, and then obviously showing his lack of maturity, plunks Kevin Youkilis at the Robbie Cano home run. And I'm seeing this. I come back from practice. I'm livid. I'm thinking, are you kidding me? This is exact repeat of about a year and a half ago,
right,
against the Royals. So now I'm upset with him. And obviously now that leads to discussion of the Cliff Lee trade with Philadelphia Phillies. I'm still mad and bitter about that because Lee was traded away my birthday, which really made me mad. So
the truth comes out.
There's some deep down hatred.
Oh, that stings.
And to me, it goes back to the point where they had option years remaining on Martinez and Lee. I thought they sold away the following season without even trying to compete at first. They weren't necessarily the best team makeup-wise, but going in that next year, that would have been 2008, I guess, to me, I thought they had a legitimate chance to fight for a central title in a very weak division.
It would have been 2000.
I guess it would have been 2009 or 10. Yeah,
9 or 10. So,
yeah, right. But they didn't. They just went ahead and swapped the pieces and... To me, they didn't get enough value for him. But this is where we disagree here. So,
all right. Well,
what do you say, my colleague?
Here's my point.
Counterpoint.
I don't disagree with the first salvo about Carlos Carrasco at all. He looked like a fool out there. But, okay. So a small market team with bad contracts on their books. Travis Hafner,
Sizemore,
and Sizemore. They were not. They couldn't sign. Cliff Lee didn't want to stay. Okay, Cliff Lee was not going to stay. He, I think, was still bitter about being sent to the minors during the 2007 season, although he deserved it.
Absolutely.
He was awful that year. So I think, though, that burned,
that bridge.
That bridge, and Cliff Lee was not going to stay. Victor Martinez was going to require much more money than they were willing or able to pay. Like, I think a Victor Martinez contract at age 31 or whatever it was going to be another bad investment. The difference being that you knew going in it was going to be a bad investment because he wasn't going to catch because they had Carlos Santana coming, and his bat is good. He's got a very good bat, but when you move it to DH or first base, it loses a lot of its value. It really gets a lot of its value from being a catcher. The Tigers can make up for it because they've got Prince Fielder and Miguel Cabrera, far exceeding
pizza money.
Yeah. They got pizza money, and they got other guys in other positions that are exceeding their, normal output for that position. So I think you know, it really did burn when they traded Victor to me, because Victor did, I think he wanted to stay. He would have stayed if they could have paid him what he wanted. He wasn't really going to give him a discount. But I think that move did make sense. And to answer the other part of it, I think the reason they traded him a year early was because around that time, and it seemed to be coming as a theory or a idea from Oakland, from Billy Beane, the theory was coming out of, well, you trade guys with years left on their contract and you get more for them. Because when you trade a guy at the deadline, you get him for a month or 2 months. And so it's tough to ask a team to give up something substantial for a guy that either won't stay or might not stay. And so, you know, we saw Billy Beane do that with guys like Danny Heron and some other guys that he had years of control on to try to get more value from the other team. And, you know, and we're seeing some of the value that we get from Victor and Justin Masterson. So we'll put that trade aside.
And Hagedorn.
And Hagedorn, yeah. And I think that trade was okay. Again, that one burned me because Victor, I think, would have stayed, but it just was a bad situation. The Lee trade, I just, you know, like, look at what the Phillies got for Cliff Lee the next year. Do you remember anyone that they got?
We traded him to Philadelphia. Philadelphia sent him to Seattle.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And they got, I'm going to say, yeah, I'm blanking on it. Andy's looking it up right now. But I'm just saying, that was a trade done a year later, right?
Right.
When he only had that.
He was traded, what, 3 years in a row?
Yes.
Then Seattle to Texas. And he signed in the offseason back to Philadelphia.
Right. You know, and here's the other thing. So my point being, I don't think there was as much of a market for Cliff Lee as some people imagined there was a market for Cliff Lee. And I think part of it was because 2 years before he had been in the minors.
Right.
And I didn't even think at the time, like, I thought, wow, he's looking good. But a small part of me was sitting there waiting for the Cliff Lee meltdown that led to him going to the minors, you know. And I think it's tough to sell this guy and get a premium back when it's like, so why was he, why did he have no control and is in the minors during your ALCS championship run? He had a really good year last year, you know.
At the same time, though, he did have some periods of success beforehand.
He did.
407.
He did. But it creates that doubt, you know, where I think a GM is going to be less willing to give up a ton. And look at the other Phillies prospects that people are always like, they should have got Kyle Drabek. Okay, well, we'll just move on from that. They should have got Dominic Brown.
Do you guys want to hear who was involved in that trade, by the way?
Yes, I do.
The Cliff Lee trade to Seattle was for 3 prospects. Right-hander Felipe Aumont, outfielder Tyson Gillies, and right-hander Juan Ramirez.
So yeah, none of them are household names so far.
Right.
I guess the better problem is the fact that Sabathia, who had obviously established himself as a major league starter, above average, Cy Young Award winner, they traded him, you know, which is the last year of his contract, and got a decent haul, supposedly, from the Brewers.
Yeah.
So I guess my point was, I'm thinking, why couldn't they get someone else, I guess, more established, maybe? Like, more major league ready than the guys that they actually acquired.
But, you know, and that's always... But they didn't get that with Sabathia. They got Michael Brantley, who did turn out. They got Matt LaPorta, who was supposed to be the more sure thing and didn't turn out. They've got Rob Bryson, who's still in the minors, and actually could be a decent reliever. He's made some progress. And they got Zach Jackson, who everyone at the time said was just a throw-in.
Right.
You know, and it's, I think it's kind of one of those things at the time, the cupboard was so bare, and it was, do we want to go for the one guy? You know, do we want to go to the quantity or the quality? And with the Sabathia trade, I think they thought they were kind of getting both because they thought, well, we're going to get LaPorta, and he's going to turn out because he's further developed. He's closer to the major leagues. And then we're going to take a chance on this Brantley kid. Well, Brantley turned out and LaPorta flamed out, so.
And LaPorta? I think they got LaPorta to bolster their AAA roster. That was why they.
Yeah. No, they got LaPorta because they had no power. Hey. They had no right-handed
AAA
power even
all-star.
Then.
AAA All-Star, Matt LaPorta.
Yeah, he is. I just think, you know, it's like you look at it and I don't think there the market was there that people imagined was there for Cliff Lee. And if you, I mean, if you want to talk about trading a star player and getting nothing in return, let's talk about trading Miguel Cabrera to the Tigers. What did the Marlins get in return for Miguel Cabrera?
Let's talk about
trading Johan Santana to the Twins for Carlos Gomez, who then doesn't blossom until the last half of last year when he's with the Brewers.
Yeah, that's a little different. I think you could make a solid argument that Gomez never had time to blossom in Minnesota, too.
It's possible. I'm just saying.
Right. I understand your point, though.
These trades are, by definition, a crapshoot, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And the Indians get a lot of flack for guys that didn't pan out. And I think part of it, though, is because in the last 5 years, they've made so many of these trades, and the odds are so 50-50.
Right.
That they've got a lot of prospects that flamed out from these trades.
There was a really interesting point, and I'll kind of wrap up on that note that Jason Parks made. He was talking the other day about, because there's been a lot of hullabaloo about possibly Texas trading Jerks and Profar to the Cardinals for their top prospect, Oscar Taveras. And the point that he made was, when you have a prospect as an organization, and especially a prospect like Profar, where you sign him as an international signing and you know a kid from the time that he's 16 years old until now he's 20, 21. You really know that player as a person and as a baseball player. And when you're in an organization that you're looking at acquiring all those prospects, like in the case of the Miguel Cabrera trade to Detroit, it was Cameron Maybin and Andrew Miller, who was a first round pick, and another Mike Rabello. You know, you don't know these guys. You might send scouts to go watch them play, but you don't know them. And I think that's why you're going to see Texas not trade Jerks and Profar for Oscar Taveras, whereas on paper it might make sense, but Texas knows Jerks and Profar. You know, they know what they get. And if they trade for Oscar Taveras, even though it might fit positionally, that they don't know Oscar Taveras. They know right. What it says on paper. And that's a lot of these organizations. You're looking at, you know, what our scouts say, and you know what we've seen, and you don't have any information past that. You know, they're not going to go tell you, oh, he's got a shitty attitude in the clubhouse, because they don't want you to know that, you know, like right. that's just stuff that you're not privy to.
I thought it was neat that they're talking about maybe trading Profar to Miami and acquire Stanton.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense because you're getting an established
right.
But that's
the trade that's hard to align usually.
Yeah,
to trade
yeah.
a prospect for an established player.
Well, and in that same respect too, just think about that on Miami's end. What if you're wrong on that?
Right.
You don't know Jerks and Profar. You mm-hmm. don't. What if you're wrong on that? Or what if you're, you know, trading Jerks and Profar for Oscar Taveras, and what if you're on the wrong end of that trade? Like, I don't. So, you know, on that point, trading prospects is very risky. You don't know whether Cameron Maybin's going to turn out to be your starting center fielder for the next 10 years, or you don't know whether he's going to flame out with a 300 OBP and a career, you know, 230 average. So.
Right. And I mean, it's, you know, the Indians have made a lot of those trades, so I think they get a lot of flack for it. And I do think, this is a whole other soapbox, but in some ways, you know, I wish they would have just let Sabathia walk. Because they make themselves right. look like the bad guys by trading these guys. You know, it's like no one hates the Indians for not paying Jim Thome enough. Everyone knows
I'm so bitter about that
all
too.
The money they offered Jim Thome. The blame is on Jim Thome,
yep.
not on Mark Shapiro and John Hart or, you know,
right.
anyone. And so by trading Sabathia, by trading Lee, by trading Martinez, they made themselves look like the bad guys. Like, well, we're not going to sign him anyways. Like, they're like Eeyore, you know. But on the other side, what are they supposed to do?
Right.
You know, they're supposed to let him walk and take a gamble on one draft pick or take a gamble on four prospects that they get in return that they had a hand in choosing and are 2 or 3 or 4 years further down their development. So it puts them in an awkward spot.
Yeah. Well, let's step down off our soapbox today. That was a good one. We got a little passion there. A little passion on that soapbox. We'd like to thank our listeners, as always. Thanks for tuning in. We'd again kindly ask for reviews on iTunes. Those reviews drive up our popularity. Thanks to Dr. Garrett Britton, Jason, and Bob. If you want to check us out on the internet, you can check us out at tsmbaseball.com. You can email us, tristatebb@tsmbaseball.com. You can follow us on the Twitter, @tristatebb. And you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/tsmbaseball. So again, for the gang, this is Andy Burdick, and we look forward to talking to you next week.